It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, alongside former Packer Brian Belaga. Here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
The best 60 minutes of your day, though, it can't be very good today. It is the Brian Belaga Homer Hour, which is good, but what's the most important thing in the world of sports? Have I trained Brian Belaga yet? What is the most important thing in the world of sports in the state of Wisconsin?
What? I'm trying to think back. I thought it was when the Miz pitched.
But that's right. You have one question. Is the Miz pitching today?
Yeah, and I asked Strophy before, and he said he pitched yesterday.
That's right. You know that because you're knowledgeable sports, he's not pitching every day yet. I mean,
correct.
Everything he's done is – this has never been done before. Wouldn't that be special if the Miz pitched every day? Just an inning.
Yeah, that would put butts in the seats.
Yes, it
would.
That's
for sure.
So, yes,
that's
the Miz is not pitching today. When is he pitching next? Doesn't matter.
4 days.
Tomorrow,
4 days,
probably,
right?
At least four. But tomorrow, it'll be the same. It's the same every day. The most important question in the world of sports in Wisconsin. Is Miz pitching today? Right now, I probably lean toward he's not pitching tomorrow. But we don't address it until the day, because he continually does things that have never been done before. I got to make a list of all the different things where they've said never done before. Also, there is the issue as to whether or not the dome is open or closed for the game, and you must listen and watch the Homer Hour with Brian Belaga on YouTube, and you go there, and right at 5 o'clock, actually it's 5:02, you will find out that, in fact, what's the story, Brian? No, we're not going to help him. You gotta go to the YouTube ESPN Milwaukee to find out if the dome is open or closed.
Clear as day now. Clear as day.
Clear as day now. Also, a baseball game is going on right now. I think it started. Auburn against UWM. UWM made the tournament. Nobody even knew they did because they had a horrible season mostly, and then they got better and they won their conference. This is how big an underdog they are. If they can lose by 6 runs, that's called a push.
Oh.
It's about the UWM, or as they call it, Milwaukee Panthers, plus 6.5 runs. It's about even money.
Wow.
So if they win, someone can do their studying. If they win, I think it would rank right up there with the U.S. beating the Russians. I'm not sure if the odds are the same. It's slightly better than the Packers winning the Super Bowl or the Brewers winning the World Series. I don't know. There isn't a dog big enough to describe the size as an underdog that they are. They beat Auburn the first time. I mean, it was like 13-8. They played last night, and it was delayed because of rain. They didn't play till like 11 o'clock or something, and they lost 8-1 or 8-3. And the assumption
that's why it's set at 6.5.
Yes. I didn't even know they did such a thing. Well, they don't in baseball. In the majors, they do plus 1.5 or minus 1.5. Plus 6.5. Getting 6.5 runs, you have to bet 115 to win 100. On UWM. I don't. If you want to take Auburn to win the game, you have to bet 1,400 to win 100. So this is, for people who don't know this, this is where they really rip people off, because if you have to bet $1,400 to win $100 on Auburn, don't you assume that if you bet $100, you'd win $1,400 on UWM, right? It should go both ways.
Yeah.
No, this is how it works. So if you bet $1,400, you win $100. If you bet $100 on UWM, you win $850.
That doesn't make any sense.
No, that's why it's such a blatant ripoff to me. But someone else who's a mathematician can probably figure that out. But you assume it's going to be much closer. So they take advantage that most people will pick the favorite. I don't know how to – what's the biggest dog? British sheepdog or a Saint Bernard isn't big enough to describe the amount, the size of the dog that the Panthers are. What's the biggest British sheepdog?
English Mastiff.
English Mastiff. Yeah. M-A-S-T-O-F.
They can weigh up to 230 pounds, which is bigger than you these days, Homer.
Yes. The Mastiffs, they are the UWM Mastiffs tonight.
Yeah.
Or actually it's going on now. It's 5:06. They haven't started yet?
No, they got delayed due to severe thunderstorms in Auburn, so it will be an 8 o'clock first pitch now.
And they're playing in Auburn.
Correct.
I think they were the best. They play the best seed gets to be the home, which that's probably more than anybody needs to know. But the UWM Panthers turned Mastiffs will be playing against Auburn. And if they win, there's no way to describe. What's the greatest upset win that you have ever been a part of in your life, Brian Bulaga? And I know you remember it. If you're such a front runner, you don't. But I got to believe it. I certainly remember my greatest upset. I felt bad for the person I beat.
Yeah, I remember 2008.
Yeah.
We beat Penn State at home when they were number two and knocked them essentially out of the national championship hunt.
And am I correct? It's hard to explain a game that felt like that. I mean, there's nothing, right?
No.
There's nothing better than pulling off an upset.
Yeah.
And especially if you recognize that they were that much better. Now, I don't know that's the case. Sometimes in college football, it could be they just didn't fully appreciate how good a team you are. Or you went, the person I beat in tennis, we play 100 times. He wins 100, I thought. Actually, the answer is 99. But did you think you were not thought of as good as you really were? Or it was just one of those days where you pull off the big upset?
No, I think it was just one of those days where we pulled off the big upset. I think we were a solid team in 2008. I forgot what our record was at that time when we played Penn State. But we were a good team. But not to where Penn State was ranked number two in the country, and they were loaded, and Navarro Bowman was their middle linebacker. they were really good. I think when the bigger teams in the Big Ten, the Penn States, the Ohio States, now you're looking at Oregon and teams like that, when they come play Iowa in Iowa City, they probably expect it to be, it'll be tough early on, but our talent will eventually overtake and we'll win comfortably. And that day was not their day. I mean,
did you beat them good, or did it take that last second?
Last second field goal, we beat them. Last second field goal, we ended up beating them. And then it was a really good game, tight game. And it was one that I'll remember forever. I'll remember that game for the rest of my life.
And now we get to the discussion of upsets. My next question. At what point in the game did you think, oh, my God, we could win this game?
Yeah.
Was it early on or we're close, we're still around, anything could happen?
I thought it was in the second quarter when we not just still around, but I felt like we were controlling the game.
Oh, okay.
Like, I felt like we had a good grip on the game. No, it wasn't a high-scoring game by any stretch. It wasn't like a 48-47 win or anything like that. I mean, it was a close game.
So I'm asking the question. They always bring up enough to do. So then do you feel more pressure because now you're thinking, damn, we should win this game. And then you feel like you should win it. I don't know that actually occurs. I'm just asking the questions they always ask. Do you feel any more pressure when you realize that you have a chance, a good chance, to beat the number two team in the country, or is that just made up?
No, I think it ramps up because you feel like you have it in your hands to do it, right? Like, and you have the guys capable, so it does ramp up the pressure, you could say that. But I think it's more you don't want to have any regret, right? Like in that moment, you don't want to be the guy that has the play that you know does something catastrophic for a potential huge upset at home in a night game, right? It was Saturday night, college game day and all that. Like, it was that type of game. I believe they were there. It was game day. And like, and once you realize you're in that game, you're like, okay, like we can play with them. It's not like that we can't, but you don't want to be the guy that has the folly that, you know.
Yeah, I can't. And I know your teammates, I can't imagine how horrible that would feel. And I can see that as being the reality of, like, you know, a good team, your teammates, and you get like under, and they're all, and you screw up and you go, you know, you did it. They know you did it. And you got to live with it forever thinking, damn, you realize what could have happened. Yeah. You want to do well, but more than anything else, you don't want to be the guy who screwed up and cost him the game, because everyone knows it, and you know it, and it doesn't care what they say outside of the locker room.
No, exactly. And it's letting your guys down. And like, and believe me, I've said it on here, and I'll continue. Like, pressure is privilege, right? Like, having that pressure and expectation, and when you get into a game, like, that's a privilege to have. Like, not every team has that. Like, you know, sometimes there's no expectation for a team to ever win or to ever be in those type of games or to play against a better ranked opponent on that stage and have an opportunity. So like, to be in that position, it's a privilege, but you don't know what it feels like until you're there. And then when you're there, it's like, okay, well, I need to make sure I'm doing my part so that I'm not the one that's to blame. If we have control of this and all of a sudden it's out of our control and it's in their hands. So like, it's a very odd position, because going into the game, everyone outside of your locker room and doesn't expect you to be in the game. I mean, they expect you to be a good game because you're on game day and it's, you know, you're at home and everything like that. But at the same time, no one expects you to beat them. They're the number two team in the country. They're coasting to a natty, essentially, is what that is. They probably had us on the schedule and maybe who knows who I think they had beaten Ohio State that year. So they're expecting, they're going to coast. They're going to coast through this thing, and it may be tight for a little bit. So, like, there's pressure that comes with that and anxiety. And to me, it was one of those games that you just don't forget.
So at the end of the game, I'm proud to say I don't know any about this, because I'm proud to say I don't know anything about the Iowa wins. But were you behind at the end, so you're driving, or what's going through in terms of what you needed to do at the end of the game to win it?
Yeah, I believe we were down by, either two, I think. And yeah, we were.
A field goal wins it.
Yeah, field goal wins
it. And you get the ball. How far, how long you got to drive, how much time you got. You walk on the field knowing winning this game is on us. We can do it. We have to do it. Otherwise, what's the point if you get close and don't win?
Yeah, I think we, if I recall, I think we got it probably around the 30, I believe, our own 30. And I think we had over a minute 30 and maybe a timeout, because Kirk's really good with his timeout.
I think Roger said this, maybe you did, that he always said the first play or getting that first down or something is just so huge.
Yep. It's the first down.
Okay.
Once you get the first down, you're rolling, because then you've gotten them, you know, from a defensive standpoint, they're out of rhythm, right? Like, because if you're in the 2 minute situation and it's incomplete, they can reset as a defense every down. They have time to reset, get a new play call in, organize, and do all that. But you get that first down, now you're moving. Now you're on the ball, and it's and they have to scramble, and you're kind of dictating the tempo of that 2 minute drive. And then you keep it going and you keep their pass rushers on the field. Well, then they get tired, and getting those guys tired is the biggest key, is getting the pass rushers to stay on the field and get them tired, so that it's easier to block. You're going to run the football every single, or pass the football every single play. We probably ran it once or
twice. So how long was the field goal? I mean, were you thinking, we got this made, or is this all? It always just amazes me about football when it comes down to the guy who's probably less a football player than anybody else on the team.
And I think it was like a 40-plus yarder.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I think it was a 40-plus yarder.
You don't need to tell me his name. Did you have a good kicker where you were reasonably confident he can do it, or like flip of the coin?
Yeah, I was confident he could do it. He's a good kicker.
All right.
So Iowa normally has good kickers, specialists.
If you say so. Is there any game that you should have pulled the upset and this didn't at the end in your life that you remember?
Yes. It was the following year. We were highly ranked, and so was Ohio State. And we went to Ohio State and lost in overtime at Ohio State. Ricky Stanzi was hurt. He got hurt in the Northwestern game the week before. So we had a redshirt freshman playing, James Vandenberg. And we were winning essentially the entire ball game until the fourth quarter, and Ohio State made a comeback. I mean, they had a fantastic team. Expected them to do that. But then we went to overtime, and they took it in overtime, no problem. They stopped us, and then they went. I think they ended up kicking a field goal to win. That's how they won in overtime.
Imagine if you'd lost both of those. I mean, you had both sides of it. I said this about so many of these things. You want to have them all, but you got to have one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and the thing about that, early on in that same season, we went to Penn State in a whiteout game and beat Penn State in a whiteout game when they were obviously more highly ranked than we were, and we upset them there again 2 years in a row, just absolutely rained on their parade. So, like, that was another one that sticks out. It wasn't as memorable as the 2008 one because we were really heavy dogs that one.
That's under the cap. We own them. Aaron Rodgers took it to a different level, but you do that a couple times, and we got them.
Yeah, you do it twice to Penn State back-to-back. It kind of crushes their souls a little bit, there's no doubt. But the Ohio State one is the opposite of that. Like, that was the opposite one of that. And it was my first time at Ohio State, so I really wanted to win that game. I mean, I felt so good about it too, as the game was going on, and we just couldn't.
Is it any different there? I mean, the tradition and quality of the team to me determines everything. But is it louder, bigger? What?
I mean, it's definitely loud. I mean, the stadium is enormous. Like
Michigan,
it's a very
100.
Yeah, it's a very big stadium, and it's very intimidating going in there, and very loud. But once you get playing, you kind of just, all that just kind of goes out the window.
That's how good the person is that you're playing. I mean, they always talk about Green Bay and Lambeau Field. Damn, it was special when the teams were really good. When the team's not as good, I'm sorry. The field can only do so much. And once people start winning or have won, there's no, like, they'll tell you this, but look at the list of all the teams. It's all because of how good the team is, you know.
Yep, 100%.
We just don't lose there. Why? Because we're good?
Yeah, because we're good. I mean, that's an easy explanation.
They could play at Green Bay High School, and you would have still been whooping people for a lot of that time.
Yeah, it would have been fun to play at Green Bay High a couple times.
Be tight.
It would be fun.
The Brian Bulaga Homer Hour, and yes, it's great. It's always sad on a day when the Miz doesn't pitch. And if you didn't watch yesterday, you don't even have to like baseball. This is historic. I went over the upsets of Brian Bulaga. Nothing in his life has been close to an upset it would be if UWM beat Auburn.
Valid.
Again. They are the Mastiffs, is it?
Yep.
The large underdog. They can't be called the Panthers. So why do I emphasize that? So that if they won, you would have a full understanding of how incredible it is, because it's set up basically so that you don't have the upset teams win, because UWM beat them once. Sorry, that's not enough. You got to maybe beat, you might have to beat them twice, and Auburn won the second game, so now they have the game to determine who goes to the next round. Next.
More of the Homer Hour coming up next on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
The Brian Bulaga Homer Hour. The Miz is not pitching tonight. We can go on. And you addressed it a little bit. The Rams have acquired Myles Garrett, meaning it just got even tougher for the Green Bay Packers to make the Super Bowl. Everything. This does not apply to Brian Bulaga. He may look. Everything to me is important. Only or first as it relates to the Green Bay Packers. Their chance of getting the Super Bowl just got tougher. But I defer to you, Brian Bulaga. What was your first thought when you heard that the Rams picked up Myles Garrett from the Cleveland Browns?
My first thought was, damn. Like, that was my first thought, because the defense that the Rams had was already a pretty good pass rushing group. I get they traded Verse.
Mm-hmm.
But you added Myles Garrett. You added a Hall of Fame like game wrecker in his place, which it's a fantastic switch, if you ask my opinion. It's a fantastic switch. It's like when Green Bay acquired Micah. You're going to acquire top. If you can acquire one of the best pass rushers in the league, you're going to do it, and the Rams did it. And, yeah, that was my first thought, was Green Bay is not only going to have to play them in the middle of the year, because they do, but to get to where they want to go, which is a Super Bowl, you're going to have to play that man again. And it's a tough task blocking that type of player, not just once a year, but potentially twice in a season, if you want to get where you want to go. Now, I get the brackets could line up a certain way, and you may not, I don't know. But chances are, if you're going to want to get to the Super Bowl this year, you're going to have to play the Rams. And to me, the offensive line, if you play against a quality defensive line like that, and players like that, you're going to have to be playing at the best of your ability at that point in the season. And you're going to get a little test about how that defense is playing. When do they play them? The pre-Thanksgiving Day game? Is that what that is? Or is it the pre-Christmas game day? I don't know which game it is. There's so many pre's this year.
Yeah. I don't know either. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's one of the two. But so you're going to get an opportunity to feel what that's about. And you get to do it in their place too. So it's going to be difficult for any team to go into L.A. and beat L.A. now with, you know, the acquisition of Myles Garrett. Because, like, again, I as we always relate it to the Green Bay Packers, he's like acquiring Micah. What Micah did and will do for us is what Myles Garrett will do for the Rams. And there's no doubt in my mind. And now he knows, on a personal level, I can win a championship. I can add a Super Bowl to my resume with this team. This team is stacked. They're a win-now team, and that just will fire him up even more. And you'll probably get more. I'm not saying he'll break his own sack record, but you're going to get more out of him now, even more so. And that is a scary proposition, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes it harder. And it emphasizes to me that the run on the Packers better not be just this year. The premise is that you're getting a better team, you have young players, and it can be harder this year But that doesn't mean you don't assume that you should be around for the next 2 or 3 years and can have a good year out of there. But, yeah, it's just to get to the Super Bowl just got that much tougher because who wouldn't? It's just like when they look at the Packers, and certainly the Rams have been closer than the Packers, and you know the Rams feeling like they should have could have won the Super Bowl last year.
Yep.
If they had had Myles Garrett last year, I know what they're thinking. We win the Super Bowl. We beat
Seattle. 100%.
There's no way that quarterback can do that if we have Myles Garrett to create the. I mean, and
no.
Right. So it's
no team that plays the maybe Baltimore did it because you know Lamar Jackson runs around so well and he's got such good mobility and he's able to escape when Myles Garrett pressures the quarterback almost every single snap. But for most of the NFL teams, Myles Garrett is a problem every single game and he's harassing your quarterback.
Yep.
I would say at least half the time. Like, you know what I mean? And that's a lot. Like, that's a lot. If you're looking at, like, a win percentage in the NFL, like, that's a ton. And the thing that these pass rushers, they always get a bad rap in the run game. Like, oh, they're not. Yes, he is good in the run game. Just like I say, yes, Micah is good in the run game. Like, they're good against the run because tackles are so aware of how good they are with their hands, how elusive they are, and how they can get beat inside if they go out and attack, you know, pass rushers like that in the run game and they want to get their hands on them and be physical, that they'll just get swiped inside. Guys end up being more hesitant and not as aggressive. And that's perfect for edge rushers because then they just come plowing in there and set the edge and just back up the entire, you know, back up the entire side. If you're running zone one way, they'll set the edge and everything's got to cut back. So, like, yes, he is good in the run game. So he is an upgrade at every measurable. He's the upgrade.
Yeah. And then you, fortunately, maybe or can't relate to this, but you can know it and still feel it, as you alluded to be on the Cleveland Browns and get traded to the Rams. And I'm sure there's a standard of excellence you want to have, and he'd accepted the Browns kind of like Joe Thomas. But he can get a ring, or he should get a ring, or he – I don't know what the words he would use is, but I am curious to how – can you explain how excited that would make him, or maybe he just plays at a certain level regardless of who he's on and where he's playing?
Yeah, I mean, I think he plays at a certain level. I mean – you don't set the sack record playing for the Cleveland Browns unless you hold yourself to a certain standard. I mean, the Cleveland Browns were losing most games, so teams are trying to run the ball and kill the clock, and he still manages to beat the sack record, which is incredible. Now you're on a team that you're going to be winning games, and teams are going to be trying to catch you, and they're going to be throwing the ball, and now you're pass rushing way more even. Like, you're going to be rushing the passer probably an extra 15 to 20 times a game, which is frightening to say the least. But yeah, I mean, he goes from worst to potentially the best overnight. And it's got to be motivating. You have to feel great about it. Like, I mean, he's got to be thrilled. He didn't take a pay cut, that's for sure. So he's getting all that giant 4-year, $160 million contract that he signed. Yeah, he's going to pay a little more tax on it in California, but it's going to get him a ring. I truly believe the Rams will win a Super Bowl in the Stafford quarterback era again. Like, their team is too loaded not to. The Rams went out and acquired two great corners this offseason as well. They get him. They re-signed Stafford for another year. So, like, they just kind of reloaded the team and made it better now with Myles Garrett. And like, they're like, yeah, who cares about that first-round pick? It doesn't matter. We don't need the first-round pick. Myles Garrett, like we've said with Micah, is better than the first-round pick. We'll take him over a first-round pick. And that's – teams that do that, I feel like, are so forward-thinking, and they're looking at it. And I understand, like, you got to plan for the future. But if you feel like we've always said the Packers feel, and Goody has said, we have a team that we think can win now, a first-round pick is great to have, right? He may develop into the next Pro Bowler, but if you can acquire a Micah Parsons, a Myles Garrett, or who, like any of these top-tier players that you know can help you win right now, they are going to be dominant for you right now. They're going to do it for at least another 4 years. If you use that first-round pick and that guy stinks, he's gone in too.
And you can already have other good young players.
Yes.
To where, and that certainly applies to the Rams and can could apply to the Packers now, where you don't feel like you have to have them as badly as a team that isn't as good. And my obsession with John Schneider just went up another level. We'll get to that in a minute. Milwaukee weight loss, it hasn't changed. Started at 229, I'm at 205. I expect being at 205 for a long time, for the rest of my life. And I'm not saying that because I'm old at 71. It's because their system works. I eat less, and I'm happy eating less. MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com, MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com, 262-235-3980. So I started the 1st of January at 229. Now I'm at 205. I could get down to 200. But I'm pretty happy. When you get old, you get worried that your face gets too thin and then people think you're like dead man walking. So I'm pretty good, right? But for a limited time, get $200 off the Milwaukee Weight Loss Summer Special. Book your free consultation now at MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com, MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com. Results may vary, and there's no intense workouts. There's nothing crazy that you have to do. I can't do that, Homer. There's nothing like that. No drug, surgery, injections, people told me before I started. That was my interest in trying it. It's almost easy. And I said, it can't be easy. No weight loss. Well, it's almost easy. The way they set it up and the way I am now, I eat less and I'm happy eating less. That is the Homer definition, and I believe the accurate definition of any weight loss program that works, because that means I can stay at this weight for a long, long time. MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com. Yes, John Schneider, not personally, but his company just moved in to the Packers division. Next.
The Homer Hour is back after this on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
The Brian Bulaga Homer Hour, and that means you can go to YouTube. If you did earlier, you would have found out very soon whether the Brewers, the Dome, open or closed. But again, the number one piece of information that you must have every day is the Miz pitching. If you follow the Brewers closely, you follow baseball, you know the answer is an obvious no. But when you have someone like that, you get a new audience with people who really may not follow the sport, and they need to know. Very simple. The question should be answered for everyone every day. Yep, the Miz is pitching, or nope, he's not. Also, we have questions. They complain that I don't necessarily use them. If you go to YouTube, Homer Hour, ESPN Milwaukee. Who's the guy with Arizona, Josh Sweat?
Yeah.
Maybe the Brewers, the Packers need him. The Packers did their thing with Micah Parsons. No one expected them to do that. The thought that they would do more than that, on me, just doesn't seem consistent with the way Goody does things. Now, getting Parsons wasn't consistent either, but I'm assuming they're not doing anything like that. They believe in the people they got, but correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I mean, I think they do believe in the people they have, but as I said on KBN, I think they're going to go through this OTA process and probably see where they feel a little deficient or light. And if that is at the pass rusher, and I said this on KBN, I always would go with the pass rusher first. If you feel like you need to upgrade something on your defense and that position is one of those needs, I think every NFL team would say, hey, I'd love to upgrade my pass rushers. I mean, obviously probably not the Rams now, but I would recommend that because those guys protect the corners.
Right.
They protect the corners. So if you have really good pass rushers that win consistently and win fast, that protects the back end automatically. So if there's an opportunity to upgrade there and it makes sense from a financial standpoint and things like that, I'm always for it. I'm always for it. So will it happen? I've seen that rumor floating around as well. I mean, I didn't think the Micah Parsons thing was going to happen, as you said. So, like, I didn't see that taking place, and it did. Yeah. So you can't rule it out. But I don't see Green Bay exploring that unless two things, right? The financials are really good. Like, the Cardinals will pick up a lot of this year's and or salary or whatever it may be. And if they go through this OTA process and they go, man, we're going to need some help until Micah gets back.
I guess I would ask you this as a follow-up. I just can't see anything occurring. Granted, I think most of this is just these workouts are fiddling and diddling. Because I don't know that you're going to see anything unless somebody got hurt that's going to make Goody change dramatically that much different from what he thinks. Because the players we're talking about, the majority of them, he's seen. He knows who they are.
Yeah, but it's also now with Gannon coming in with this scheme.
No, yes.
Right? And fitting what now Gannon is looking to implement and what he needs and with the feedback from Gannon, right? Like, yeah, I mean, you felt really good, or you felt good enough knowing what Halfley had,
yeah,
right?
Here's my next follow-up to you. I don't know that Gannon's done enough that if I'm Goody, I'm going to listen to what he says. He proves a little bit to me, then yeah, but his resume is good, but not so much that he comes in and says, let's do this, I'm going to do it. I want to see a little bit. I could see that occurring prior to next season.
Yeah.
Agree or disagree?
No, I agree with you. I think the reason why Sweat is being mentioned is because Gannon was his coach in Arizona, and he was very good in Arizona, or he's been good since he left there from Philly. So I think that's the one thing that's kind of intriguing about it, is because of how good he's played for Arizona, and obviously under Gannon and now Gannon's here. I think that's the one thing kind of fueling these rumors and speculation, but I'm with you. I think there's got to be a little bit of a prove it to, you know, go out and acquire guys. If a new coach is saying I need guys, I don't see Gannon going to Goody and saying I need another edge rusher. I don't see that being the case. Mm-hmm. I doubt that.
I mean, I could see him going to somebody, not a big name like that, but saying, just want to let you know, there's a guy there that other people may not realize is that good. But if you ever get a chance, that's
yeah.
But I don't even know how much GMs listen to coaches or.
I mean, it would be if the conversation got brought up. What do you think we're lacking? Right, like that would be like from your group. What do you think we're lacking, or where do you think we need some help? And that's where that conversation would strike up, right? I mean, there's obvious dialogue between coordinators and the GM, right? I mean, the GM has to provide the coordinator with the players, like, right, plain and simple. Like, so there's definitely that dialogue. And if that dialogue is coming from Gannon saying, like, I know you just acquired Micah last year, and Micah is all world, right? Like, I get it. And Micah may not be back for 4 weeks. I get it. And he'll be back. And once he's back, he's going to play like Micah Parsons. But I think we need something else at that position too. I think we need another guy, right? And with the new scheme, right, if you play the 3-4 scheme and you can kick Van Ness as a 4 tech and have Micah or say, we'll just say Sweat because it's in the conversation. Outside of him, that's very good. That's really good because Van Ness is built like a 4 tech. He's big. Got long arms, physical. That makes sense to me. And then if you go into nickel and passing situations, Van Ness can kick to a 3 tech. And then you have Sweat and Micah lined up outside. So, like, there's a lot of sense to it. It's just, are those conversations even taking place, or did they? I don't know. Like, again, if they pick up, I'll believe it that Goody could make a move because he did it for Micah.
Yeah, we have to accept that now. I can't say he's never done it. He's done it. The question that came on YouTube, Josh Sweat will be interesting, but I just don't want snaps taken away from the young edge rushers we drafted. What are your thoughts? I know your thoughts.
Yeah, my thoughts are I have no idea what the young edge rushers are even about, but I know they're probably not as good as Sweat.
Yeah.
Like, I just know that. Like, I know that for a fact, and it's exactly what we were kind of talking about earlier in the show, right, about, like, those first-round picks, second-round picks, if you trade them. If you trade them for players that you already know can do it and do it at a high level, I always would, like, say, get – especially, like, Sweat's not, like, a 30-year-old guy. He's still a relatively
– Yeah, he's young.
Yeah, young player. So, like, it's not like you're acquiring a 31-year-old guy that only has a year left in the tank. Like, you're acquiring a guy that's going to be in your team for 4 or 5 years and is going to produce for you. So, like, I always would say if you can give up picks, say it's a second or third rounder or whatever it may be for that guy, it's like, yeah, for sure. Not saying that there's not any talent with those young guys that we have. There could be, but I'd rather see them on a rotational basis than as a starter, potentially, or getting 55% of the snaps. I'd rather see him at this young age behind Micah, behind a guy like Sweat, behind Van Ness, maybe getting 30% of the snaps and having juice when they come out of the field and flashing, right, and building that confidence. And then by the time those guys are almost done with contracts, Micah and those guys may be done with contracts, and then you make a decision, right? Like, that's
and you're not dependent on the unknown of a young player, or you're dependent on it less. And I did mention John Schneider has moved into the division. We didn't get to it, but we will next.
More of the Homer Hour coming up next on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
The Brian Bulaga Homer Hour and my obsession with John Schneider and having to live with Packer followers, fans, with letting Schneider go, not getting him, just increased in the division. The Minnesota Vikings basically hired the closest thing they could get to John Schneider, the assistant GM of Seattle, Nolan Teasley. I don't call him that. He has only one name, Schneider 2. He joined in 2013 as an intern, and in 23 was made the assistant GM. The Vikings peeps. Nolan brings tremendous football acumen and a proven track record of success under the tutelage of John Schneider. He was part of 9 playoff teams, 3 Super Bowl appearances, and 2 championships. That's all you need to know. Apparently, those in charge of the Vikings think just like I do. Can't get Schneider. What are we going to do, Brian Bulaga? What are we going to do? Can't get Ron Wolf. What are we going to do?
Raid the staff.
Raid the staff. Get the person from the highest spot who started as a nobody as an intern. Now, we know one thing about Nolan Teasley. Schneider liked him. Kept moving him up.
Yeah.
2023 assistant GM. The challenge of the Packers got a little bit tougher. How much? I don't know. Because the Vikings think just like Homer does. Are you worried about that? Do you put it that way? You know what it was like with the Packers and the respect the rest of the league had from the time that Ron Wolf succeeded and the people that he brought in.
Yeah. So I would have been more concerned if he had control over this last draft and free agent class, right? Like that would have been that would have been a little more concerning.
Well, we don't really know. It'll come out. I don't know how much input and how much control he had. I know one thing. John Schneider liked him, or he couldn't have kept moving him up. Check every couple years. Intern. Yeah. Started as an intern.
Yeah. What I'm saying is I would have been more concerned if this guy had control over the Vikings during those periods.
Oh, okay. I got you. Sorry.
And had the chance to remold the team in an offseason. That would have been a little more concerning.
Yes.
Him showing up now, he can only do so much
right
at this point. But in the future, yes. it will be an issue.
Excellent point. They told me I don't listen well, and I don't listen because all I can think about is Schneider. Damn, he was a Packer, and now he's a Viking. But you're right. The ability to have much of an impact this year is small. I mean, they've already made their impact when they decided what to do a quarterback, right?
Yeah.
And he had nothing to do with that.
Yeah, he had no skin in the game there.
So remember the name. Nolan Teasley. But don't remember the name. Who's the GM of the Minnesota Vikings now? Schneider 2. Yep.
That's right.
And he could fail. Not everybody associated with Ron Wolf is successful. I have to look. Most of them were.
Yeah, most of them ended up being pretty good.
Yes. And it hasn't changed. In honor of the greatness of the Brian Bulaga Homer Hour, it is now. Everybody together now. ESPN National in progress. Make sure you do it right.